be brave often comes with a price. Today we talk about what it takes to be courageous, the determination, the perseverance of it all. Do we all have courage? Or are we awarded it like the badge of honors given to military folk? Or is courage merely the average of our cowardice and our reckless abandon? Next we have Mike. I'm sorry, Matt. He was in the Air Force. We'll join the LAPD Police Academy soon. But Matt Johnson is also colorblind, in the literal sense.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi. Good afternoon, Rosie.
When did you find out you were colorblind?
Actually, I have to make a correction first. I was in the United States Navy.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right. That kind of goes with your second question, colorblindness, or as we like to call it, color vision deficiency. Just because colorblind actually means, you know, without color, you don't see any color at all. And to give you a bit of a perspective of what how I view the world through my eyes, say the average person can see 30,000 colors, I can see 25,000. So it's just a little bit different, and what I have isn't as is pretty mild compared to what other people have. I first knew when I was about 8 years old. I was diagnosed by the school nurse. She gave me the Ishara exam, which is the color dotted numbers, and I think I got like 6 out of 10 right or something like that. And I asked her what that was for, and she said, "Don't worry about it. Go back to class."
So, were you worried about it?
You know what? I didn't at the time. I didn't understand the implications of it. You know, what type of vices would be, or you know, what type of restrictions I would have throughout life with it. And so, yeah, at times it's been a bit frustrating, but it's just one of those things I've learned to cope with through life and not let deter me from what I really want to do.
And when did you know you wanted to go and be a part of the Navy?
In high school, once I didn't figure out what I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. You're sitting there in class your senior year and everybody else is going off to school and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, but I'm not really sure if I want to do that or not. I really just want to get out of the house. Could somebody please pay my rent for me? Could I go on a vacation? And the Navy seemed like the most logical step for that. It's like a free vacation paid by your Uncle Sam. That's what it was for me. That's what it literally was. So,
what are the colors that you can't see?
I can't see some greens. Is the scientific term for it would be I would be called a deuton or an anomalous trichromat. Because I'm eventually going to be asked these type of questions, I've put a lot of emphasis into understanding what exactly I have. I'm fortunate enough where I am a veteran, so I get to go to the VA and I get to ask my ophthalmologists and optometrists, my doctors, tons and tons of questions, which I'm sure they're really sick of asking by about this point or answering. But let's say average person can see 20 greens, I can see 10.
And so, in the military, I mean, green is a pretty important color. I mean, you're wearing green right now, so.
It's one of those things where I come up to a street light and I see green on the bottom, I see red on top. I legitimately see green and red. Mm. That's not a difficult
task.
Well,
it's green to you, right?
Yeah, well,
it's
that's
objective.
Well, yeah, make that the important subjective point. You talk to Professor Turner over in her watercoloring class, and she'll tell you every single person here on Earth sees colors differently. Mm-hmm. And we all do. We all perceive colors differently, and that has to do with the mechanisms of evolution, which I'm a physical anthropology student, so it's the types of things that I study. So I have a kind of an advantage over that than with other people who have a color deficiency. But yeah, it's a little bit different. Sometimes it can be somewhat confusing. Sometimes, not a lot. It's not like for me. It would have to be a circumstance where somebody's wearing a Kelly green, and they're wearing an off green, something that's kind of close to Kelly. That's a real subtle change. I couldn't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. I could still tell you it's Kelly green or it's lime green or it's forest green or something like that, or even light or dark green. But when it comes to subtleties, that's where I have my issues.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a moment that in the military you were discouraged because they were telling you, you can't do this because you don't see what we see?
Yeah, that's why I'm here right now. That's why I'm here. Yeah, I was in MEPS. I'm from Minnesota. I was in the Minneapolis MEPS station in Minnesota, and this is like I'm gonna date myself here, but this is like 1996, and my recruiter was all pumped up. He's like, "Oh, you're an athlete in high school, and you're a smart kid. We're gonna send you to the SEALs," and honestly, that's where I wanted to go. And he came back, and I qualified. My ASVAB score was high enough. I qualified for every job there was, basically. And he came back and said, "Okay, well, you can't be a SEAL. Well, why not? You're colorblind." Okay. It's like, matter of fact, you can't be a corpsman either. And which is what I was in the Navy. I told him, I said, well, if you don't give me a job as a corpsman, I walk. And because that was also supposed to be a disqualifier. So what they did is they took my job as a corpsman. They made me active reserve. I was still active duty. But they said, okay, for some reason, being active reserve is different from being active duty, even though I'm doing the same job. But the military looks at it differently. So they gave me a position of what's called a TAR. Active reservist, and I was on active duty for 5 years. I did the same job as a corpsman with all of the same tasks and objectives, and I did just as well as any other corpsman. But yet that was supposed to keep me, that was supposed to prevent me from doing that. But I still did it anyway.
Do you have any stories about how it kind of got in your way? I mean, can you recall any just completely absurd moments in your life that you've had just because of it, or?
I'll be honest with you. It's never hindered me.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Maybe because I've been aware of it. Maybe because I've adapted to my surroundings and my circumstances. Mm-hmm. I think there were a couple instances where I asked somebody, you know, what's this color versus this color, but it was more of a confirmation than anything else. It was, there's a certain amount of confidence in seeing art or seeing colors like there is in solving a mathematical equation. Either you have the confidence or you don't. And I think whenever I've questioned myself, it's always been something of confidence. But then there's been times where my confidence is off the scales and I just, that's brown, that's green, that's red. I mean, I'm just nailing them left and right. There's like no issue whatsoever. So that's when it comes down to. Probably the most absurd moment I ever experienced in my life with colors is when I went to airborne school, which I wasn't supposed to do either because I was colorblind. And yeah, I guess you kind of see a pattern progressing here. So I went to El Toro when it was still open for my airborne physical. Mm-hmm. And I went through the whole thing and I sat down with the lieutenant, who's a Navy doctor. And he asked me, so I see that you failed your Ashara exam, which is, again, the colored out numbers. And I told him, I said, hey, doc, I said, I've never passed it in my entire life. And he asked me, he said, can you see red and green when you're up on the airplane when it says red to stop, green to go, and stoplights and so on and so forth? I said, yes, sir, I can see that. It's easy. I can see it if it was upside down or sideways. And then he asked me, he said, what'd you get on your PFT, which is your physical fitness test? And I told my Sarah, I got a 300, which is a max. And he said, all right, you can go to airborne school. He signed me off, and that was it. That was it. And it was supposed to be a disqualifier. But, yeah. You know, it's one of those things where if you take an entire group and you just generalize, which I think is kind of lazy personally, but if you do that, yeah, you're going to make these assumptions and you're not going to understand what people have. And in the process, you're going to lose good people. You really are.
How did you become a Navy SEAL when you said that you weren't supposed to?
I never became a Navy SEAL. I was a technical term for what I did was I was an Airborne Fleet Marine Force Corpsman. Is what I did, which actually I think sounds a lot cooler, but that's just me.
Longer titles always.
Fleet Marine Force is when you're attached to a Marine unit for so long, you get you get a designation, and the Navy gives you designators. And when I was completed airborne school, I got the PJ designator, which means parajumper, from the United States Navy. So I had my rank and I had all these designators after it, and it was really nice to write down. It was really impressive, and I feel pretty good about myself. for.
That kind of leads us into our whole discussion about courage.
Right.
And, I mean, have you had anybody that was really courageous that kind of influenced you in your own life and decided, you know, I'm gonna take this path and fight for America pretty much?
Yeah, there's been a significant number of people. I'll be honest with you though, the person who's been the most significant in my life is not a military person, but is actually my father. And that had to do with my mother had a bit of a chemical dependent issue, and while I was growing up, and my father was essentially he was a single parent raising me in 1980s. And mind you, my father got sole custody of me in 1982, and at the time, for a man to get sole custody of his son, that was like extremely, extremely rare. But he had sole custody of me, and he spent his entire life, pushing me in the right direction. I mean, I grew up playing baseball. That's what kept me out of trouble. Every single night, my father would come home from a long day at work, and it's mat time. Let's take Matt to the field. He's got his baseball games, and that was spring, summer, and fall until it started snowing in Minnesota, which it commonly does. And then about December, it's, you know, back to the gym for me to get ready for another season. So my father to me is probably, you know, is the most important person in my life, and is the person that really kept me that kept me going. And as far as I'm concerned, any single parent, male or female, that does that to me, that's courageous. That's really courageous, especially considering the circumstances and what they had to go through dealing with the other person and trying to maintain that level of stability in a son or daughter's life.
So would you say it's because your father that you wanted to push through and prove everyone wrong, saying, I can do this, don't tell me I can't?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where it came from. And despite, I don't want to get into the long story about my mother, but my mother's always kind of been like that too. She's never been very successful, but it's a bit of a long story. But yeah, with my father, it was, you know, you need to work hard. That's how you persevere. You might not be the fastest, you might not be the strongest, but if you work hard, it will come. And don't let anybody tell you you can't do it.
Is that what courage is to you?
Yeah, it is. It is. That's exactly what courage is to me. It's doing what people ask you to do when you're in a situation like a command situation. You follow orders. That's courage. You do the things you're supposed to do every day of your life to give yourself a beneficial life. You know, that's courage. Going to school, getting an education, that's courage. Doing things that are tough and you don't want to do it, but you're going to do it anyway. That's courage. That's real courage right there.
I know oftentimes it's very hard for servicemen to admit that they're courageous, but what have you done? I mean, or can you tell us a little bit about some courageous things or some things that you just kind of persevered through?
Probably not going to want to hear my answer for that.
I definitely do.
I don't know if anything I've ever done would be considered courageous. I do it because inside of me there's some sort of fire burning, or burning fire that drives me to do whatever I do. I don't know if there's been any particular one moment in my life that I could say that what I did was real courageous. Except for, I don't know if you'd call this courageous, but I remember going through hospital corps school and a lot of the senior corpsmen there telling us, when you get to your Marine unit, you pick up that guidon. A guidon's a flag, which they carry that represents the colors of the unit. You pick up that guidon and you run circles around your fellow Marines. And you do that because you gain their respect, because we've all done it before you, and the men and women who have died wearing this caduceus, which is the medical insignia on the battlefield, they did it before you. That's why you do it. You do it because of them. You want to keep their name going. That's how they live through you. And so I would think about, you know, you're familiar with Iwo Jima, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, the Battle of Iwo Jima, where, I mean, my statistics could be wrong, but I believe it's some number of 700 corpsmen walking onto the island and only 4 walking off or something like that, actually surviving. And in course school, we'd hear these stories of this courage by these corpsmen that's saving the lives of their Marines, and they didn't come home. And to me, that was sentimental. That was emotional for me, and that was something that kept me going. And basically everything I ever did, any type of success I ever did, I would just pass it down. It was because of them.
Was there ever a moment when you thought you weren't going to come home?
No. I was never put in that situation. And even if I had been put in that situation, it wasn't something I would think about or give it any credit to. The most important thing to me was doing the job I needed to do to make sure my Marines got home. You know, and that's kind of being a corpsman, a hospital corpsman, is all about. You're there because of them, not because of yourself. You work out, you bust your butt, and you do all the things you're supposed to do because of them. You know, that's number one. You got to make sure your Marines get home. And honestly, I do miss that. I really do miss that part of it.
You said that there's a burning fire inside of you that makes you persevere and makes you want to work hard. Wouldn't you say, or I would like to think, that the fuel to that fire is courage?
Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes it's easy for us to become complacent, to become relaxed, to become comfortable in our environment, and I think it's really difficult, and it shows that's not good. But you know, to move forward in life, it shows real character to say, you know what, I'm going to take a chance, I'm going to put everything down, and I'm going to go for it. And if I fall on my face, I fall on my face, but I'm going to go for it.
I know that you took the watercoloring class at Pierce College, and you said that it was to better understand color. Right. Did you go in thinking, if I fall on my face in this class, I fall on my face, and I tried my hardest to understand these
colors? Well, I wasn't going to let anybody beat me. I wasn't going to give up after that if that didn't work. It did work, by the way. But yeah, if I would have failed, I was going to keep going. I was going to try to find something else. You know, and of course, you're thinking to yourself, honestly, you think to yourself, yeah, this might not work, but you're not really thinking it's not going to. You're like, no matter what, I'm going to make this happen. This will work, and I will push forward.
Do you think that it's the law of attraction that you're putting out there personally? I mean, it seems that you have a very positive state of mind that you always think that this is going to work. I will do this. Do you think it's the energy you're sending out?
You should see me when I strike out. I'm not this happy. I'm not happy at all.
In baseball or in real life?
In baseball, yeah. In baseball. No, sometimes in real life I can kind of walk on. You know, you're not happy about it, but you keep going anyway. Yeah. Maybe. law of attraction? I don't know. I've tried to understand it for a long time. I've tried to ask myself, why do I have it, or why am I special? Why do I have this? You know, why do I have these quote unquote handicaps or obstacles? And I think we all do. I don't know. It's bordered on the philosophical and the religious at that point. And I don't know. I've thought about it, but I've never honestly come up with a good answer for it. I never have. I just know I don't like striking out.
And I would never think that a watering color class would be very competitive.
I actually found that out from our cousins across the corner in Great Britain. They've been doing that. But there's a whole, since 2003, color vision hasn't been an issue with hiring recruits or cadets in any British law agency.
Wow.
Yeah, that's something that they just decided, you know what, we're gonna use coping strategies, and it doesn't seem to affect the performance of any of their officers.
Mm-hmm.
So now they've been using it for a while. That's where I got the idea, was from them. I'm not exactly sure if that's exactly what they do, but that concept of coping.
A lot of times bravery is kind of synonymous with wearing uniform. What do you think it takes to be a courageous person? Do you need to be in a uniform, or is it something that you're born with? How do you attain it?
No, I don't. I don't believe you. You need a uniform to be courageous. I thought to myself. I kind of thought that question might come up. To be honest with you, well, at least I thought to myself, what is courageous? What would courageous be to me? And the first thing that popped into my head was a little girl or a little boy at home, with his or her parents fighting and beating on each other, and them being able to survive that, and grow up despite that fact, despite everything that had happened to them in their youth, and to be successful, and to realize that wasn't their fault. You know, I see that as courage. You know, I think kids, especially kids, tend to express courage in a lot greater magnitude than adults. I think for us, we have our experiences behind us to give that. That's our advantage. They don't have that. You know, so they're kind of just at that point, they're truly going with their gut feeling. And it's just kind of who they are at that point.
That kind of sounds like a reason why somebody would want to join the police academy or the law force. And, I mean, what makes you also want to, again, persevere and join another, get into another uniform?
I'll be honest with you. There were times I was sitting around at my mother's house because my mom was, she was dealing drugs to support her music habit. And I would sit there in my room, and people were coming in and out all day long, and I saw stuff. And I was home with my father. My father had me one particular weekend, and Minneapolis Vice had busted my mom, and she went to prison for a year, and they asked her for her supplier, and her supplier was a Colombian, and so. Being the age I am now, thinking to myself, wow, it could have been really, really easy for somebody to come in and kill my mother, kill my stepfather, and kill me. And I didn't even have a choice. And so to me, yeah, being a police officer, yeah, that comes to my mind. Walking into a situation like that where I see a young kid, you know, who was about my age and everything happening, and here I am able to protect him or her. You know, when I didn't have that. I had my father. Fortunately for me, I was safe with my father, but it could have been a lot different. You know, it could have been an issue where I'm not even here to give this interview today.
Do you think that if and when you become a police officer, and let's say you are put into a situation that you go into somewhere and you see a mother who has a child, but she's dealing drugs and it's just not a safe environment, do you feel that you would become overly sensitive with the subjects, or do you think you'd be actually not sensitive at all because you're like, wow, I went through this?
No, there would be some emotion. I don't think I'd have any flashbacks, but I think I wouldn't have any flashbacks. But I would probably look at the kid and see myself. I'll be honest with you. Yeah, it would be somewhat emotional, but at the same time, here I am given the authority by you know whatever state or whatever city I'm working for. With the certain amount of ethics that they expect from me, which is, you know, I ought to make the situation better. You know, that's what my ethic is. I want to make the situation better for everybody, especially this kid. So how can I do that as a police officer? How can I make this happen? How can I put them in a secure environment and make sure that they're going to be okay and watch over them? You know, and to me, that's a part of being a police officer. Is protecting people, you know, people that can't, especially people that can't protect themselves, and they can.
What do you hope to get from when you go? Because I know you're going into police academy soon.
Yeah, I'm going to Rio Hondo. My class starts July 6th. Actually, I just finished up with my orientation, so I got about a month and a half left, and I start.
I like how you looked at your watch.
Yeah. Like the minutes are going to change.
What do you hope to get, though, from the police academy? What do you hope to come out of there with? Other than obviously being a police officer.
You know what? More courage. More courage. The ability to be able to do things that are more difficult, to do those better. To be able to make split decisions. To be able to make decisions, to be able to stand by my decisions and live with those consequences. You know, there may be a point in my life where I have to shoot somebody. And that thought scares me because I don't know how I'm going to react to it. But I think that's natural, and I understand that. And, you know, hopefully at the time I have the courage to protect my partner and to protect myself and to do what I need to do to get us home at night to our families. Because I think at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, is getting everybody who's around us home safely and getting ourselves safe, getting ourselves home safely.
And how about your own family? Do you have kids and a wife? And if you do, what kind of courage and determination would they have to know that, you know, you're going to be going out there on a daily basis in harm's way?
Well, I don't have a wife yet because I haven't found a woman that can put up with my striking out tantrums. I don't have any kids. I don't have a wife. I have somebody I'm seeing, but she's kind of aware of the situation. She's okay with it. But yeah, it's going to take an extraordinary person. They're also going to have to have a lot of courage, because essentially my kids and my wife, they're sharing me with everybody else. Yeah. That's essentially what's happening. They only get to have me when I come home. You know, the city and everybody else gets to have me while I'm away at work. So yeah, that's going to take tremendous courage, tremendous patience, especially patience, a lot of it, doing that. I don't think it would be the proper thing to say, well, they should be okay with it because it's what I'm the one that's bringing home the bills and so on and so forth. I just think that's a given. It's not something that really has to be put out there. Definitely patience is going to be a priority for everybody.
I know you said that when you do become a police officer, your main concern is getting the people around you home safe. Do you feel like that's the mindset you got from being a corpsman?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. It was drilled into our heads in hospital corps school, and then we went to field med, and that was the first time we were exposed to the Marine Corps. It was at that point, and then hearing all those stories of these corpsmen who gave their lives to get their Marines home, and it was one of those things where I was prepared to do that. You know, I was prepared to go to the Great Hall of all those corpsmen who had passed before me. That's exactly where it comes from, and it's been 100 years of more than that of corpsmen standing beside their Marines and vice versa. We have my class in Field Medical Service School in Camp Lejeune had a saying: Marines have a few good men, corpsmen.
That's a good saying.
I've heard a lot of people describe courage as almost like there's no fear of death. What is your own take on death, and how do you view it?
Well, like Benjamin Franklin said, it's inevitable. That and taxes. I probably feel the same way for both of them. It's something that's going to happen, something that we're going to come to terms with. Is it something where we're going to – is it going to happen on the bed next to our family? That's how I hope I go. Mm. That would be the best – that would be the most opportune circumstance for me, would to be – to have my family around me while I'm dying, or when I'm at that point when I'm getting ready to move on. Death, it's different for everybody, but I think if you do go and you're in a situation like that, you're either in the military or a police officer, which is also military. It's technically paramilitary. You want to be courageous in it, and you want to make it count. If you're going to do it, and if it's going to happen, you want to make it count. You want to make it for something, either saving your partner's life or saving a kid's life or saving some, you know, innocent bystander's life. You want to make it count. You want to make it worth something if you do go.
Does that happen often?
I don't know. I know as corpsmen it is. That happens all the time because that's just how we're bred. Every corpsman who goes through the green side can handle being on the green side with the Marines. You can do exactly what they do. So it's expected of you, and I don't think it's happened from time to time, but I wouldn't imagine there's actually been too many situations where corpsmen didn't live up to the expectation of being a corpsman when they were killed in combat. I wouldn't expect that at all.
You mentioned earlier that you thought, you know, even though your mother was battling it, you know, with all the chemical dependencies that she was on, you still think she's courageous. And, I'd like to know if, you know, do you have other really strong, courageous women in your life?
Yes, I have my aunt, who kind of filled the shoes for my mother. She raised I guess including me. She had four kids of her own, including me. She had six. I ate a lot. I like the refrigerator. matter of fact, she's still, even after I left, since I can remember, my uncle will go to the store and he'll still, till this day, my uncle will buy food for me and leave it in the fridge. So, she's always been very important to me. She's always been there when I needed something. She's always treated me like one of her own. And to me, that's been very important. She is satisfied with any woman I bring home. It doesn't matter who she is, what background she is, what color skin she has, and none of that. She's perfectly content with whoever I bring home, as long as they're treating me like the way they should be treating me. There is the one exception. My family are Twins fans, so I can't bring home a White Sox fan.
Ooh, okay.
I can't do that. That's like the only one exception.
That's the only one.
That's the only one. Other than that, you're good to go. She's always been there for me. Any important event in my life, she's always been there. And mind you, she's raising four other kids besides me at the same time, you know. And all my cousins play, you know, they all played hockey. I played baseball. So it's like she's at my game, then she's at their game, then she's at somebody else's game. And it's all of this that's transpiring. So her whole life is dedicated to raising all of us. And to me, that's very special because she was always there for me, always there at my games. There for my boot camp graduation. I mean, everything. She's always been there.
Is she still raising you?
I would say probably. No. No. You know what? I talk to my aunt at least once a week. Mm. I talk to my aunt like once a week. So
that's good. And she still lives in Minnesota?
She lives in Minnesota, yeah. Yeah. A lot of my family live in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah,
food your uncle buys you might go rotten a lot since they live in Minnesota.
Well, fortunately, there's a couple other, I have a couple cousins that are males, so they help out. So, yeah.
Have you met a lot of women in the service who are, you know, just completely just brave and strong-willed? And I mean,
every single woman I met in the military was brave and strong-willed. You had to be to deal with a bunch of guys like us. But seriously, every woman I met in the military had a special quality to her. You are a special person to be in an environment like that, especially when the traditions are still geared towards men. And we kind of, you know, the military, for all of the Marine Corps' greatness and positives, it still has a very machismo view on the world. It does. It just does. It's the kind of the last to change of all of them. And not that Marine women who serve as Marines are any better than sailors or airmen or soldiers, but what I know, my experiences with the different branches, I still say there's a little bit different. There's a little bit different type of special quality that they have. But every single woman I ever met, as far as I was concerned, was brave and courageous just for being there. Because that's, again, that's kind of going against what the norm is and what the traditions of our culture have been.
I know that you kept bringing up past corpsmen and the ones that gave their lives for all of it and things of that nature. Is there one story that sticks in your mind of a corpsman that gave his or her life to the military?
Yes. Doc Ballard. I got the name. I'm pretty sure I got the name right. HM3 Ballard was a corpsman in Vietnam who had been shot 3 or 4 times, I think. Went out, picked up, grabbed a Marine by his shirt. We call blouse. It's at the top part of our uniform, call it a blouse. Dragged him back to the hole. Stitched him up. Ran back out, grabbed another one, got shot a couple more times in the process, brought him back, and by this time he'd been shot like 5-6 times, so he's directing another Marine how to patch him up. He goes back to the rear for 2 months. He survives, goes back to the rear for 2 months, goes back out to combat again. This time, they're all standing around. Grenade flies in. He jumps on it. Face first. Doesn't go off. And he survives. I don't know.
I just got chills.
What do you do with that? How does somebody do that?
Wow.
So, to kind of give you an idea of what where our bar is as young corpsmen, and where the bar is set way up here, gives you an idea of, like, no matter what I do, no matter how hard I try, I am never going to be Doc Ballard. It's not going to happen.
Was he a big influence for a lot of corpsmen? Or?
Oh, yeah. We heard his story at Corps School in San Diego when we were there. We heard his story, and that was probably one of the most talked about stories, because you're sitting there in the first or second class or whatever it is. He's sitting there telling you the story, and you can't believe it. Like, you're just like, wait a second. Guy got shot 4 times. He goes out, gets one of his Marines, comes back, works on him, goes back out again, gets shot 2 more times, come back, he brings the guy back, and he's sitting there, you know, directing the Marine to work on him. He goes back to the rear for 2 months, goes back out to combat, and then jumps on a grenade that doesn't go off. Who does that? Yeah. How does that happen? But, I mean, mind you, he survived. There's a lot of Marines or a lot of corpsmen who did the same thing that died, but that's the one that sticks into your head. It's like, you mean I can still do all that stuff and still maybe survive? That's what you're thinking to yourself. But the bar's been set so high by that you're just, no matter what I do, is not good enough. No matter what I do is not good enough. But you're still telling yourself, I got to do better. I got to do better no matter what I do.
I went to a veterans memorial near Veterans Day, and I'm sorry, Memorial Day, and they brought in the Vietnam vet wall that is, it's mobile. And I spoke to some vets, and a lot of them, one of the most traumatic things for them was that when they came back from the war, the reaction to them was just horrible. And they came off a plane, had just fought for America, and you know, tomatoes were being thrown at them. They were getting cussed out. After that, I mean, after that whole, that just atmosphere of America, I mean, how does a soldier still go on? And when you do see people who are completely against the war, how do you react?
Me personally, I've never been through that, so I won't pretend to know what that's like. It brings up the issue of the flag burning. For me, I defend those people who burn the flag. Even if I disagree with it, I still defend them. I still defend the people who are Americans and who cuss and scrutinize. I still defend them because it's their right. It's what we're fighting for. You're going to fight for one thing. You have to fight for it all. You got to take the good with the bad, or what you perceive to be the bad. I think with them, though, and I know for myself, I think when you're in a situation like that, and people, you have to remember, you have to focus on the people who do love and care for you, which is your family. And then you have your brothers and sisters in arms, in the uniform, who are there with you too. Because in the military, it's all about teams. Not just about I, but it's about the team. And if you focus on the team, you're going to feel a lot better about the situation. You can't really change it. There's nothing you can really do about it. But just focus on those people who are important in your life, the people that you served with, and the family that supported you. That's the best you can do in that situation.
Well, thank you so much, Matt Johnson, for coming in.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with the police academy.
Thank you very much.
We wish you much luck. So we were just with Matt Johnson, who was a corpsman in the Air Force, and even though he was colorblind, he still was able to accomplish a lot. And in our book, he's very courageous, so thank you. I'd like to dedicate this show also to my friend Christopher Prucook, who also served in the military. And I hope you feel better, Chris. So this show is for you. And next up, we're going to have a playlist that Rosie and I both think are very courage-themed playlist. And most of these bands are right here in Los Angeles. So first, we start with Camera Talk by the Local Natives. We have Coconut Records by Any Fun. We also have Ask Her to Dance by Coconut Records and some more coming up, so stay tuned.
future. Memory tells me that these times are worth working for.
Had any fun, so I won't come around.
to Word Pictures Laboratory on kpcradio.com. Right now we're just playing a playlist. You're hearing Coconut Records, Ask Her to Dance. After that, you're going to hear Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. Stay tuned.
Ask her to dance and she'll tell you a lie. Tell her she's wrong and she'll tell you you're right. Sunset on this town only hours ago. Though it feels like this evening moving so slow. Oh no, am I making sense? Am I making sense? Am I making sense? Am I making sense? Well, the problem with this scene I don't understand. You say you come with me, but you don't take my hand. The sunset on this town only hours ago. Though it feels like this evening, don't wanna come slow. Am I making sense? Thank you.
change. All you can think of is where you started.
You're listening to Word Pictures Laboratory for KPCRadio.com. We're just playing our playlist that has to do with courage. And right now you're listening to Local Natives World News. Next up is Panda Bear, Bonfire of the Vanities. And after that is Seawolf, Winter Windows.
There is a man inside a room in the forest. He sits alone upon the chair his father left him. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark, with the radio on. The voice crackles when it says that God will save you. He will take you from the lonely life you're living. If you give, if you give, if you give up on what you want. The man stands and pours himself another bourbon. He stops and watches the birds through the winter windows. And the light from the morning dew. I thought I love you and our love would be forever. How could I hit you, the only one who ever loved me? Said the man to his shadow.
Tonight, and let's not talk about next summer, 'cause
Pictures Laboratory on kpcradio.com. Thank you for listening. Right now we have Wake Up Little Sparrow. Before that we had Seawolf, and after that we've got War Paint with Elephants. Thank you.
Yeah. that you find.